You can go ahead.
Thank you. All right, good morning. Today's date is Thursday, December 17th, 2020. The time is 9:32 a.m. It's a meeting of the regular meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board of the Employees Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee. Roll call.
Mr. Bell?
Here.
Mr. Campbell?
Here.
Ms. Ford?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Mr. Conrad? Mr. Conrad? Not present as yet. Mr. Kovac?
He's on here.
Okay.
Conrad's here.
Thank you. Mr. Kovac?
Here.
Ms. Sawa?
Here.
Mr. Patty?
Here.
A quorum.
This is Mr. Patty. I just didn't hear Ms. Ford or Ms. Sauer. Are they both here? There was a pause, but I didn't hear them.
Yes, they both checked in.
Here.
Okay, thank you. Approval of the minutes.
This is Mr. Allen. Sorry, I was on mute there for a second. Owing, there aren't going to be any draft minutes for this meeting to be considered. They'll have to be pushed over till January. Owing to the short period of time between the last meeting and this meeting and the fact that there was another election to be conducted, our stenographer and a vacation for our stenographer, the minutes will have to wait until January for the board to consider, because there just wasn't enough hours in the day for Ms. Wills to put them together, given all the work she had to do on the election. It was a kind of a curveball, I think, the runoff election. So that's the story behind that, as is noted on the agenda.
All right, thank you for that explanation, Mr. Allen. Is there any questions? Are there any questions? All right, item number two, Chief Investment Officer report, Mr. Silber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'll turn it over to Mr. Sauer, if he's prepared the performance updates to give to the board.
Thank you, good morning, everyone. The fund ended November with a value of $5.32 billion. November was quite a strong month for returns. The I think owing to two major factors in the market, we saw some security around the presidential election result, and then some probably better than expected news on the efficacy of the two main vaccine candidates for COVID-19. So that led to a rally in risk assets and also a shift in leadership from really large growth stocks leading the market to small value stocks leading the market. So this meant that the fund returned 7% gross of fees for the month, which outperformed the benchmark by approximately 105 basis points. And really the main drivers of that, as we mentioned, with small and value leading the way, that meant that managers such as Brandis and the DFAs did well. So Brandis added 29 basis points to the fund's performance. Loomis Sayles, with the risk-on environment, high-yield credit rallied as well, so that benefited Loomis, and they added 25 basis points. And then Newton's return-seeking core of that strategy did well. They added 14 basis points. The fund style bias added 37 basis points to returns, and as I mentioned, that was primarily from the U.S. small cap, and then value, really both domestic and international. As of December 15th, the fund is up approximately 1.7% in December, which brings the year-to-date return to up 3.9% net of fees, and the approximate value of $5.42 billion. 9 out of the fund's 16 active managers are outperforming year-to-date on a net of fee basis, and the private equity asset class is exceeding its benchmark year-to-date net of fees. Year-to-date, the fund has generated investment gains of $188.2 million, paid out benefits and expenses of $407.3 million, and received contributions of $114.7 million. As David mentioned at the investment committee meeting last week, we actually hit an upper bound for public equities due to the strong gains over the past month and a half. So we executed a rebalance that's involved moving $96 million out of stocks. We were able to contribute $21 million to real assets, which is the principal strategy. And then we'll be contributing a total of $49 million into absolute return. 38 of that will be contributed this month, with the balance of $11 million will be contributed in January. And that also leaves the fund holding sufficient cash to make the December benefit payments. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them at this time. Otherwise, that concludes my report.
Mr. Sauer, Mr. Klusman, Mr. Sheriff.
Go ahead, Mr. Klusman.
Eric, I know it won't mean anything, but I know you like doing math, but have you run where we would be if the Allianz issue hadn't occurred? Like, I think it would be helpful to help understand the impact of that this year, maybe at year's end, if you could.
Run
two numbers, like when we do get our final 2020 return, just put back in the Allianz portfolio, and if, say, maybe one iteration would be if they held flat from what they had at the beginning of the year, and then maybe if they had met their benchmark in 2020, what our number would have come back as. It kind of would, I think, help us visualize with our assumed rate of return and what the impact of a selection of a bad manager can actually do to us. At least for myself, it would be. So if that's not too much work for you, I'd appreciate that.
No, I mean, it's not. I mean, and that's something that we are tracking. We run a year-to-date attribution. I mean, in a quarterly report, we show you a quarterly attribution, and that's year-to-date as of the quarter, but we also, we are running that every month. And through November, the impact of Allianz was approximately 6%, but 6% detraction to the fund's return. So we'd be looking at 9.9 roughly, if that hadn't happened. So that's kind of where we stand there. I don't know if David has any other comments that he wants to make on that, but it definitely is something we're tracking.
Excellent. That's why I like asking you guys questions. You're always six steps ahead.
Eric's absolutely right. Our best estimate is about 6% right now, and we'll continue to. We'll see if we can run the two. I mean, I think that 6% number, Tom, to be clear, is probably an estimate of what if they would have tracked just kind of the asset class benchmark. We'll see if we can run a scenario where if they were just flat, what that would have been too. But yeah, if you can be patient and maybe this is something we could probably provide you at the when we go over fourth quarter performance in February, at the February investment committee meeting. So we'll make a note to do that.
All right, thank you, Mr. Silber and Sauer. You continue, Mr. Sauer.
That, That was all I had on the fund update, unless there are any other questions from the board.
All right, thank you. Item three, investment committee. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Mr. Patty, for making it hard for you. Yeah, I was just going to add a couple of things since now that we're done with the performance update. I'll be brief with my additional comments. But I just want to let everybody know I've been in touch with Dan Fuss. And he's very interested in continuing the tradition. And even though it would be virtually this year, presenting at a January investment committee meeting, he's blocked off a couple of dates for us. From 9 to 11 a.m. on either January 7th and also on January 14th. My plan is to work with Terry Siddiqui, and I think we're going to send you an email that if you have time, if you're able to take a minute out of your afternoon and click on the link and just respond to the poll, that'll help us try to coordinate this. It's basically going to say, do one of the dates work for you? Do both of them work for you, or do neither of them work for you? And if we can, if one of the dates ends up working for the majority of the board, I think we'll move forward with that, and I'll keep you updated if we end up being able to put this on the calendar. The second thing I wanted to mention, just one more thing to add on the rebalance. From what Eric added, I would say that, you know, think of the rebalancing and kind of in three steps. We implemented the piece everything we could do before the investment committee meeting last week. Right away, there was a piece that we put in motion as soon as the investment committee meeting was over, that kind of incorporated the mix that the committee selected. And then the third piece we're looking to finalize over the next couple weeks before year end. We've had some correspondence with some discussions since the meeting with Callan. We're trying to look for ways. We both agree that, I think staff and Callan agree that before we move to a full 13% allocation of real assets, the appropriate thing to do is to go through a real asset structure review. And so we're working on timing with Callan to do that. It'll probably start early next year. But at the same time, we do think that there are things we can do at the margin to help the rebalance of moving down the equity allocation closer to the new target, and work within the existing structure and parameters that the committee's provided for the private real estate portfolio. So there are some things we're going to do with getting cues, for example, with a few of our, potentially two or three of our existing private core real estate managers. And we'll, of course, keep you updates at future meetings on any actions that's taken that we do there in terms of moving money around. The last thing I wanted to say is I just want to wish everybody a safe and happy and healthy holiday season and new year. And thank you again, all of you, for your support during this challenging year. That concludes the report.
Are there any additional questions? All right, thank you, Mr. Silber. Item number three, investment committee report, Mr. Conrad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At its December 10th meeting, Callan presented phase two of the fund's asset liability study, which included additional information based on questions from November's meeting. After discussion, the committee approved mix 3A from Callan's recommended options. Compared to the fund's current allocation, mix 3A increases real assets from 11% to 13%, increases global equity from 43% to 44%, and decreases fixed income from 25% to 22%. Next, staff discussed how implementing the real asset increases in mix 3A. It takes some time since illiquid private real estate currently comprises a majority of the fund's real assets exposure. Staff also updated the committee on a public equity rebalance that was initiated on December 7th as strong equity returns pushed the fund's allocation to the stocks above the asset allocation range set forth in investment policy. After that, Callan provided an update on the fund's real estate allocation. Staff provided the committee with a tentative 2021 due diligence schedule, and staff provided a performance estimate for the fund as of December 9th. The investment committee recommends approval of the following item, approval of asset allocation mix. That ends the investment committee report.
All right, thank you, Mr. Conrad. Item A is set for the approval of the asset allocation mix. Are there any other questions regarding that? What Mr. Conrad discussed, and we discussed at length at the investment committee meeting.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Klusman.
Okay, Mr. Klusman.
Yeah, a question and then some follow-up afterwards. I guess it's to the executive director, secretary. Mr. Allen, are you aware that the City of Milwaukee, the plan sponsor, is currently seeking legislation in Madison to provide that the annual employer pension contribution be lower than the actuarial determined amount?
I am not. That's news to me. I thought the legislature was out of session.
Okay, well, they have had some discussion, and
I've not been aware
of that. With that. So we can talk more about offline, about tracking such things that are of interest to the fund and we should have been made aware of as board members.
Yeah, I was not aware of that, so we can talk about it, Tom, but I'm not sure about this. Are you talking about they had public hearings or something? It would have been noticed?
Council file 200668, to be specific.
Okay. Again, we'll talk more about it. I am not aware of that.
All right. And therefore, with that advent of that information, we talked at length at the December 10th meeting and received very specific testimony from Callan that all of the assumptions and everything that they made in their presentation to us about adjusting our asset mix were wholly contingent upon contributions being made going forward. And now that we have learned this information that the plan sponsor has clearly announced their intent to want to not do that, that throws at least my support for any change into the garbage. That's it for my. I'll be voting against this. I know I did support it in committee, but this information has now come to light. It was public on the 7th, and it would have been nice to have known by the 10th. But apparently, some didn't tell us that.
All right,
Mr. Chair, yes. Mr. Bell.
Yeah, can you just sum up what you're referring to? There was some over-talking there going on. If you can just kind of give also just a quick sum up of what you're referring to regarding that file.
Who are you talking to, Mr. Bell or me?
No, Mr. Klusman. There was some over-talk as you were kind of explaining it, and it wasn't really clear as more than one person were speaking at the same time.
Yeah, that usually seems to happen when I speak. I seem to have a regular habit of others trying to silence me down and talk over me. But since I have the floor, City Council File 200668 says that the city is and has instructed their lobbyist to go to Madison and seek legislation to allow for the annual employee pension contribution to be less than the actuarial determined amount. And when presented, that lobbyist said that they've already had some conversation with, quote, Republican members and had felt there was some support for that. So did that come across?
Yes. Yep. Okay. And that was December 7th, you said?
Yes, I will provide that to Mr. Allen so he can distribute it to the other six trustees that aren't aware of this.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you. Any other questions?
Yep, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Bell, you have...
This is Mr. Campbell.
Okay, Mr. Campbell, go ahead.
Hey, Mr. Klossman had made reference to a legislative case number for the city regarding this. Could you just repeat that, please?
Yeah, 200668. It's okay. It's item 98 on that agenda within that file.
Okay. I did hear you properly, and I was pulling that up as you were saying it. It looks at it is in relation to something in regards to the mayor of hiring and firing the police chief and potential changes to the Fire and Police Commission. How would the ERS funding be a part of that discussion at all?
You must be on a different file. 200668 is a substitute resolution endorsing the proposed 2021-2022 City of Milwaukee State Legislative Package. Like I said, I'll get it to Jerry and he'll distribute it.
Okay. Excellent. I appreciate it.
Mr. Bell, did you have something? I think you had something earlier, a comment.
No, sir. I was just interested in getting some more details, just the numbers and everything, as well just to do some research. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Conrad, go ahead.
This is the first I've heard of this, but I don't see why it would affect our approving the allocation, and for two reasons. First of all, even if the city decides to short the contribution, it doesn't necessarily follow that we would that it would be wise for the fund to suddenly adopt a more aggressive investment policy, since there's no guarantee a more aggressive policy would result in more returns. And secondly, it's kind of a long way from the city sending its lobbyist off to Madison with a proposal to that proposal actually being adopted. So my thought is that we should approve the asset allocation that the committee approved. And if in the event it does transpire that the legislation proposed passes, or some legislation proposed passes that affects the fund or the contribution, or the level of contribution, we could at that point revisit the allocation issue. Those are my thoughts on it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Conrad. Mr. Silber, are you still on?
Yes, I'm still on.
Just a question. If this approved, if this asset allocation mix doesn't get approved, then it just stays with the current target mix, correct?
By default, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Is there a motion to approve the, are there any other questions? Okay, thank you. Is there a motion to approve the asset allocation mix that was approved by the investment committee?
Conrad moves to approve the allocation mix.
Mr. Campbell, I'll second.
Okay, Ms. Wills, can you do a roll call vote?
Sure. Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
Aye.
Mr. Klossman?
No.
Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
Mr. Kovac?
Aye.
Ms. Sawa?
Aye.
And Mr. Patty?
I didn't hear Ms. Sawa. I'm a no.
Ms. Sawa, again?
Aye.
Okay, that's
okay,
6-2 quorum.
All right,
passes.
right, item number four, Administration Operations Committee Report, Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had a meeting prior to this one. I think most of you were in on some of the discussion due to its length. We talked about both, first item was continued negotiation of the CLA contract. After a lengthy discussion, we decided to continue that negotiation. And we also discussed the DF Consulting contract extension. And that as well is going to need minor changes. And we did approve those changes through motion, and contract extension was approved. Are we able to talk about the details in open session?
Yes, I think so.
Which one?
How about the extension?
We'll get to that when we get to the full item.
Okay. That concludes the report regarding.
All right, thank you, Mr. Bell. Please be advised that the Administration and Operations Committee may vote to convene in closed session on the following items A and B as provided in Section 19.851E State Statute, Wisconsin State Statutes, to deliberate or negotiate the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business. Whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session, the committee may then vote to convene an open session following the closed session. Is there a motion to go into closed session regarding items A and B?
No.
Mr. Bell, is there a second?
Conrad seconds.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Conrad. Jan,
yes.
Ms. Wills?
Sure. Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
Mr. Kovac?
Aye.
Ms. Sawa?
Aye.
Mr. Patty?
Aye.
Quorum, and if you'd say the time, and then I'll pause the recorder. Thanks.
10 a.m.?
Thank you. Quarter's on.
All right. Time, 10:06 a.m.
Thank you.
Okay. Item A is set for approval of the CLA contract. The committee has recommended the issue be held until January to resolve some contract language issues. So with that, we'll go into item B, approval of the DS consulting contract extension with the modifications that have been explained. Anything additional? No, hearing none, is there a motion to approve the DS consulting contract with the current modifications?
That will motion.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Second?
Second.
All right, second by Ms. Sawa. Any hearing no objections, the motion carries. Item number five, new business. Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the first item, as usual, is retirement death claims and refunds for the month of November. And there are really no unusual items. It's just routine business to approve the payroll. So I guess we just need a motion as usual.
Mr. Campbell, I'll make a motion.
Mr. Campbell, second. For a second.
Conrad seconds.
Oh.
Mr. Conrad. Hearing no objections. Motion carries. Item B. Mr. Allen.
There are no conference requests this month that I'm aware of, but if anybody would like to raise one now, if anybody wants to attend something that might be in person later next year or virtual at the present time, but I'm not aware of any requests at this point.
All right, you can continue on.
Okay. Item C is pension board election results, and in the packet, the election was tallied, the results were tallied on Friday, December 11th, and so they obviously weren't able to make the packet, which went out previous to that, or actually was due out the same day, and so we got a report from the election commission that was emailed to each of the trustees, and I don't know if you all have it in front of you, so I'll read the results. Carmela Patty received 1,198 votes, and Molly King received 1,348 votes. And this is for the term of trustee office expiring at the end of this month. So Ms. King will be joining us in January. She's been sworn in, as I understand it. Actually, I did witness that virtually. Mr. Ozarski swore her in. So that concludes that, unless there's any questions or comments. Okay. We did add another item,
Mr. Bell.
Mr. Bell has a comment, I think. Go ahead, Mr. Bell.
Sorry, I had a technical difficulty regarding the conferences. I would just like to mention I'm hoping to attend the NCPRS module 1 and 2 regarding the fiduciary class. It's early March. I think the cost is $400 for a virtual class. It's just to complete my accreditation.
Okay, so we can arrange for that easily, and their NCPRS normally has a fee for that, so we'll make sure we pay for that with the city cards that we have in our office for that purpose.
Thank you. This is Mr. Patty. I think we have a credit with NCPRS. We should have
we do in fact have a credit. Mr. Patty and I were planning to attend a conference that was in fact canceled, so I'm using part of that credit because they've rescheduled it for after the first of the year. But there's still the amount left, and I don't have it at my fingertips, but we'll apply that, and if there's any excess, then we'll pay for it, over the credit card.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
No.
No. Item D.
So there's another item. Item D. Mr. Patty asked me on Friday to put this on the agenda, so I did. We put it up for discussion. I'm not sure exactly what the specific issue is, so we just put discuss lease at 7989 North Water Street building, and I believe it involved the fourth floor as well. So, Mr. Patty, did you have something you wanted to mention about that?
Yeah, I just wanted to a couple things. Regarding the building, and it's my understanding that, well, to kind of go back just a little bit in time, is that there was discussion when we renewed our lease for a 5-year lease that, you know, other options that, you know, could be considered, because it was kind of done in a little bit of haste, that it was brought to the board's attention without much time. I believe it was about 5 days that we had to make a decision to renew our lease at the time, and it was renewed for 5 years. And then following that up with the fourth floor related conference room use and issue discussion also was had a second level of controversy to it. And then, so that kind of sets the context of what I had discovered about a month or so ago, and wanted to bring that to the board's attention and obviously discuss it, is the fact that when we discussed the renewal of the lease, there was a discussion and input regarding the amount of infrastructure that ERS paid in regards to supplying fiber optic lines and backup generators, et cetera, to the building, and at ERS's expense. And other tenants are obviously able to utilize some of that equipment, from my understanding. And now I find out that on October, or that the building sold to a different, it sold in somewhere around September of 2020 of this year for approximately $6.25 million, if those figures are accurate. I don't know if Mr. Allen or the staff is aware of that sale transaction. So that's my first question is, are you aware that the building sold and has a new owner?
Yes, I did. I thought I forwarded an article in the newspaper to all the trustees in one of the Friday mailings about that. The building has sold. Our contract carries over. We have met with the new ownership, and we had multiple discussions with them. So we do have we understand each other, and so our contract just continues on the same terms and conditions. We did review this with the city attorney's office. I just want to go back to something you said earlier. And Mary Turk, are you on the line?
Hello? Yeah,
Mary is our contract administrator. So about the term of the lease, I know that our lease expires in March of 2023. And did we in fact renew it? I thought it didn't expire.
No, I don't know what that is in reference to.
Yeah, I know that we had an amendment to the lease to lease some of the premises on the fourth floor. I thought the original contract was going to go through 2023, but that's really neither here nor there.
The contract has been in effect since 2007.
Right. Okay. And so just to clarify what our lease holdings are, the main contract goes through March of 2023. We did amend the contract to provide to lease that classroom up on the fourth floor that seats, 7,500 people perhaps. And in addition to that, which many of the trustees may not be aware of, but it's very critical to our operation, we do have our data center on the fourth floor. And that's always been a part of our lease. It's a sizable room up there, and we have all of our servers and everything. And Jeff and Terry can speak to that if anybody has questions about the technology details. But the thing that's the most important about that is we consider our lease options is that if we were to leave this building, we'd have to consider what to do about the data center, whether to leave it in place or to try to move it. And the thing I should make... We have had discussions internally on numerous occasions since the beginning of this pandemic emergency response experience, and we've already started to explore the idea of what should be the proper footprint for our offices and when the pandemic comes to a conclusion. Hopefully it does, and soon. And so given the fact that most of the world has found a way to try to operate offices remotely, we've taken that up seriously as to really what is our necessary footprint. And we're still engaged in that. But the thing that I wanted to make sure everybody is aware of, that data center is an integral part of our operation. And to move it would be a seven-figure cost. And there would be some risk associated with it as well. If you jostle that, those servers and things, they might have to be replaced. But the seven figures, to put that in context, would be a little bit more than 5 years worth of rent. So that would be a major consideration. In addition to that, I have talked to the DPW folks about, office space for us. And I've had several conversations over the years. They tell me there's no space available at City Hall until the renovation over there is completed. And there's certainly no money from them until 2024. They keep telling me that they plan to relocate the city attorney's office. But that's been in the offing for longer than I've been here with the city, almost 13 years now. And they're planning to remove the city attorney's office from the Zeidler building to the eighth floor of City Hall. which would leave space potentially for us in the Zeidler building. So we would be willing to look at that, but it's not in the cards, you know, before 2024. And there are other city properties that I have I've had discussions with them about, and with the fire chief about, you know, an old firehouse, et cetera. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that we've been thinking about this a lot, and, you know, given the magnitude of our operation and everything, we think that the cycle for reviewing our footprint and any possible change would need to start well in advance. And in fact, the board asked us to start it well in advance. And so with 2023 looming and the expiration of our lease, we're going to begin to discuss this in the new year in 2021, and we certainly will come and bring this discussion into the operations and administration committee. And at the next full board meeting, we'll probably have a request for a referral to the A&O committee. So pardon me for my lengthy comments, but I just wanted to fill the board in about everything that we've been considering with respect to the office space. And I appreciate your bringing this issue onto the table, Mr. Patty, because it's in all of our minds.
Yeah, so really, thanks for those comments. But the real issue here is that we did discuss it, and we asked for more information and to do it in more timely manner and to give the board more lead time into any of the issues that came up. And one of the things that we did talk about was purchasing our own building. And this building came for sale at the cost that it sold for, which I believe is below market value, and we're paying market value rent space for our square footage. And we have such an investment in the building, seven figures to move the data center alone, not including all the other things that we've discussed in relationship to it. My real question is, why weren't we part of the discussion as far as buying the building? We are a long-term investor, number one, so, and we're a long-term entity, right? We're supposed to go into perpetuity. So with that being said, we could have owned this building, likely, and we also make investments in real estate, and what better investment in real estate in ourselves, where we don't have to make all the movement, and we already have the investment in this particular property. We like the location, it fits a lot of different spaces, and we're not even utilizing the whole space that we do currently lease on the third floor to begin with. So I guess that's my question. My main question, my number one question is, why weren't we involved in the process, at least inquired about that the building was for sale and that there was an opportunity to purchase it? And that's my number one question.
Well, I can address that, and maybe Mr. Silver would like to address it too, but I'd like to address it first. So first of all, I guess I would like to acknowledge that we are an unconstrained global investor, number one. And number two, our forays into purchasing real estate in the Milwaukee real estate market have been historically notoriously unsuccessful. And many years ago, before I joined the board, we did have investments in Milwaukee real estate, notably Northridge Mall, which turned out to not be a very good investment for us. As a result of that, and this is, and David, you can comment on this, but because I wasn't here at the time, but as a result of this, this is why the board brought in Townsend as a manager and to handle real estate investments. Beyond that, my understanding has always been that although we are an unconstrained global investor and we can go anywhere, we are constrained to purchase our investment securities through outside active managers. We, under state law, we do not have the authority to buy stocks and bonds, for example. And our board has historically, since the time of outsourcing our real estate process, also used outside investment managers for real estate. And I don't know, David, if you want to have any comments about the merits of owning real estate in the city of Milwaukee, but I'll just say that we have a lot of exposure to the city of Milwaukee already because our plan sponsors are the city and its various agencies. But mostly the real reason is because we use outside investment managers to purchase our securities, whether they're real estate partnerships, stocks and bonds, hedge funds, et cetera. David, do you have any further comments on that?
Yeah, I'll you know, for me, I'll stay out of
I mean, for me, the biggest issue is this, if we were to consider purchase and call it an investment for an F fund investment, I think it does present some legal issues that would have to be ironed out. My understanding of how Chapter 36 has always been interpreted for me and explained to me is that we are not allowed to make internal investment decisions on specific investments. We have to hire a consultant and outside experts, investment managers, to make those decisions on our behalf. But to me, to me, it's more of a, if you consider an investment of fund assets, it's far from clear to me that we would be allowed to do that. Maybe if it's considered a operational budget item, it would be a really big operational item. Possibly there's a path there, but again, that would have to be explored and probably have to go through a number of hurdles and approvals too. But that's how I, that would be my reaction to using fund assets to invest in real estate. It would give me pause if it was driven by staff or the board without being driven by a consultant or an investment manager. Because I think we have to do that per Chapter 36. I wanted to say I think that's how it's always been interpreted and explained to me from a legal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Silver. So, and we have a consultant in investment with real estate, which is Callan. And so I guess my thing is it doesn't have to be, it's not exclusively an investment opportunity. It's also the fact that if we're going to be in this building for 40 years or 20 years or 100 years, that just being in the building and paying rent to somebody else is not necessarily a wise and prudent issue expense. If we could have owned this thing over that same period of time and saved the beneficiaries, whatever the X amount of dollars is, when you add all those things up. I mean, we've already made a lot of investments in the building, in the building's infrastructure itself, not including the appreciation costs, without taking into consideration any other rental tenants at all. Over a period of time, you're going to make up that $6 million that the building sold for. I guess my main question is that it never came to the board's attention. We change rules all the time regarding all kinds of different things, and whether it's a board rule or Chapter 36 or a combination of the two, if it was brought to the board's attention, it could have been a consideration. Is my main thing, especially that we had discussed the issue just a few months before this came to light. So that's my main concern and issue, is that it never came to our consideration to vet those things that Mr. Silber had explained eloquently. And if it wouldn't have worked out, then it didn't work out, but then we would have more of a reason to know that. But in the long term, if we're going to be in this building for another 15, 20 years, which what it sounds like at least, due to the other issues that we have kind of locking us into the space, the other expenses, that it would have been something to consider. Whether it would have worked out or not, we'll never know, but it would have certainly been something, I think, that we should have been considering at that time, obviously now that it's passed. But I just wanted to bring that to light, that's all. I don't know if there's any other questions or comments regarding it.
Yes, Mr. Chairman?
Yep, Mr. Conrad?
Yeah, Mr. Howell, I'd just like to know, our current building, is it fully leased or are floors vacant? And second, the building across the street, the former bank building, the older one, is that thing almost half empty now, or what's the status of that?
Well, in our building, the occupancy is nowhere near full occupancy, and that was one of the problems for the prior owner. He was having trouble meeting his his financing obligations because he didn't have full tenants. As I understand it, it's us and fiduciary. Most of these offices are vacant.
Okay.
I am not well acquainted with what BMO plans to do with their vacant building, whether they're going to continue to use it, but we can certainly make inquiries over there. I don't have a problem with that.
Well, I'm not suggesting moving, because, but to me the problem appears to be the really high cost of moving that really kind of makes it hard for us to take advantage of lower rents. If you look at what's happening across the street, the current owner of this building might be putting it up for sale again in the next few years. That's all I have to say.
Well, I think the pandemic has raised a lot of issues about office space in downtown and cities all across the country. I think you have a good point there, Mr. Conrad. Hopefully everything recovers quickly, and I think there are a lot of people who are going to want to still be downtown. This is a very vibrant downtown, so I'm confident and I'm hopeful that Milwaukee will continue to have a vibrant central downtown area.
Yeah, but I think buying a building, I don't think, is an investment issue. It's probably a question of whether it's a proper capital expenditure.
I see.
Thank you, Mr. Conrad, and I agree. I mean, you could start with just a regular capital expenditure. If it turns into an investment, that's great. But I mean, if we're going to, so Mr. Gopalan, I don't know if you can reference off the top of your head, but what the current monthly lease is?
Our lease is annually, this is Jerry, is about $175,000 a year. Approximately, best of my recollection. Mary, you have a better number because you're closer to the contract administration.
Hey, this is Dan. We pay, including our base rents and our common area maintenance, about $25,000 a month.
$45,000 a month?
$25,000.
25. Okay. And does that include the fourth floor?
Yes.
And some up. Okay.
The fourth floor is $750 a month.
Okay, thanks. That just puts it into context. I just wanted to have a discussion regarding it. That's all.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Kovac, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate this discussion. I'm somebody that has been pushing this on the capital investment side, not the buying of the building, but the potential moving out of this building. And a couple things Jerry said, well, one of them is new to me, more recently, the expense, as Rudy pointed out, the expense of moving, given our ITs, is something we would have to factor in. And part of why I was pushing this is I am aware of the eventual space that will be available in city-owned property, so I guess I do wear two hats, city and pension board. So if we're going to be paying rent, might as well pay it to our plan sponsor, right? But obviously, I wouldn't want to pay more rent to the plan sponsor than we pay to a private third party. But it's certainly a way to create some synergy and also just get an even better location. But it is true. I don't think it's a 15-year no, but it might be a 5-year no because and we'll know a lot more about a lot of things in a few years when we get to our next 5-year stabilization about how much money the city's going to have going forward. But just specifically on the capital side, which is affected by all the other economic pressures too, but is a little bit independent of operating. On the capital side, we've made such an investment in the basement of City Hall that some of the other investments, namely moving the city attorney to the 8th floor, have been put to the back of the line for a while. Whether they'll ever get to the front of the line given some of these other pressures is an open question. But I would certainly say eventually it would be crazy for the city to spend all this money shoring up City Hall and then have the best floor in the building be vacant indefinitely. So it would certainly be my hope that eventually something will happen with the 8th floor, but that may not be imminent. So once that happens, it frees up a floor and a half in the Zeidler building. But the timing of that, it's not working out the way I was hoping. You know, we right now we're on a, it's not month to month, but there's a 60-day notice to leave from us or from our landlord. At some point, we might want to trigger that. But my initial optimism over how quickly we might be able to move to Zeidler It's not going to be as quick as I was hoping when I first broached this issue. I think it was last year or the year before.
All right, thank you, Mr. Kovac. Any additional comments? I just want to address one thing. I think that it's more important to pay rent to the plan itself than to the sponsor. I mean, they kind of go hand in hand, but I think at some point, if you're not paying it to anybody, it's best interest of all parties. So that's all. Item number 6, medical reports.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in your package, you have the normal monthly report from the medical panel and the medical council. This month, it's pretty much limited to the medical panel approvals, and it's only a handful, five re-exams, all of which were approved by the medical panel for continuation of benefit on re-examination. So there's really not much to consider at this time. No motion is needed to approve any new benefits for anybody.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Klusman.
Go ahead, Mr. Klusman.
Yeah, sorry to go backwards, but with the building discussion, it got a little away from me and I couldn't get to the mute button fast enough. I believe that we didn't get a motion for Mr. Bell's and Sieper's class. Did I miss something? And if so...
Oh, thank you, Mr. Klusman. Thank you very much. Good catch.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve that.
Conrad seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Conrad. Thank you, Mr. Klusman, for bringing that to our attention. Any objections? Hearing none. Conference has been approved for Mr. Bell's fiduciary course. Nothing with item A and number 6, item A, Mr. Allen. So we can go into item 7, unfinished business, legal opinions, Mr. Allen or Mr. McLean.
Mr. McLean, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only thing of note is that everyone will notice that the firemen's and policemen survivorship fund issue is still on there. I apologize. I was hoping to get that done by this meeting, but as I'm sure everybody knows, there were a few election-related lawsuits involving Wisconsin and Milwaukee that consumed essentially every minute of my day for 3 weeks. So I do apologize for that delay, but it is essentially completed, and I think I can include certainty pending any other legal disasters happening between now and the next meeting that it should be done by then. I believe we took care of several of the service requests on there, or at least discussed them today, and everything else is being diligently pursued. I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone has.
All right, hearing no questions, you can continue on. Anything else regarding legal opinions?
Service request. This is Mr. Allen. We had on our agenda this morning contract for internal audit services, which has been brought before the board and approved. Also on the board agenda was the DS consulting amendment, which has been considered and approved. The service request outside the city attorney's office. There's no new items, no new progress report on that item that's on the list. Pending legislation report, pending charter ordinances for common council action. Go ahead, sir.
I think you said that you commented that the contract for the internal audit was approved.
Well, I'm sorry, I misspoke. I did misspeak, in fact. For internal audit, it's been held over pending further negotiation on indemnification provisions. The DNS consulting contract, however, was approved. Thank you for catching that. The pending charter ordinances for common council action, there's some updates on there for some activity. The resolution is scheduled for consideration before the finance and personnel committee. This is for it's really just a routine budget item to carry over monies appropriated for 2021, or not to carry it over, but to put the budget into effect. And then on the item that Mr. Glusman raised, during the meeting about the lobbying of the state government to change the ordinance for our contribution, that was a Judd Legg item. Melody and I attended the Finance and Personnel Committee, and I apologize to the board. This is a curveball to us, I must admit. We did not expect to see this. We were not informed by the budget office or the administration that this would be coming down the road. And so, nor were we notified, by the Legislative Reference Bureau on this. So we will be having some conversations about that. This is a major item and a major departure. Normally, we would be brought into these discussions. It's really, I'm blindsided by it. And I apologize to the board. That should not have happened that way. We had no idea that that they were going to propose this. And it is a rather dramatic turn, and we will get involved in it immediately. Continuing on, there's no other pending changes to the rules and regs right now or the legislative committee referrals at this point. So that's the end of that report.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Glusman?
Yes.
Go ahead, Mr. Glusman.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Gary. Should we put someone talking over me again? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Should we put this on this tracking report? And then I guess it begs to the question of, now that we're aware of this and the way lobbying goes, if we don't do anything, then there's one lobbyist in a room advocating in a direction. Folks always say, well, nobody said anything on the other side. And sure. I think we can agree as trustees, fiduciaries to this fund that is not in the best interest of our constituency, all the members, the 27,000 members of this fund, to have it underfunded. So should we be employing a lobbyist to counter this effort? That's something that at least we should be seriously discussing.
Yes and yes. So it will automatically appear on the report as a tracking item for pending legislation. So you can count on that being on a January meeting. And then I guess the second yes is really only my opinion, because I'm just the executive director, but I would suggest that that this be referred to the legislative committee, because that's the appropriate place for the board to to arrive at its position on this issue. So I will put it on the agenda for next month for a referral, since it's not on the agenda this month. If there should be somehow fast tracked, I'll let you know that. But because I guess the legislature comes back into session in January, so I'll be finding out if there's any danger of this moving quickly through the legislature. I will be back and ask for a special meeting. But otherwise, Tom, I think you're correct. This should be reviewed by the board, and the board should decide what its position should be on this. And the legislative committee is really the place where this goes. That's chaired by Mr. Ford. So we will, we sent this up for referral to that committee, and pardon me, I got a little frog this morning, so that that it can be properly tracked and the board can consider what its position should be.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you. Any other comments regarding that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair Kovac here.
Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Kovac.
Yeah, I would just echo some of what Jerry said. Yes, this did go through. I was actually not aware of it till Trustee Closten brought it up, and I researched the number, and it was in that file. I think it was item number 98 out of more than 100 items. And indeed, it is in there, and it is a surprise to me, which the fact that it's a surprise to Jerry and a surprise to me, obviously I would apologize for that, because I did eventually vote on this at the Common Council level. I did not review in detail every item. I'm not on the Judd Legg committee. I did watch part of the presentation there, but I don't recall this being discussed. Maybe it was, though. I'm not on that committee. I watched part of the presentation, but not the entire presentation. So I'm going to talk to our IRD folks and to our budget folks about how this got put in the packet without consulting Jerry and me on it. But
it's certainly an item worthy of further discussion, and I apologize for not noticing it, wearing my other hat, bringing it to the board's attention, and thank you, Trustee Kreutzmann, for catching it. One note I would make is that ever since the gerrymandered maps and the permanent anti-Milwaukee majority has been in place in Madison, most of our legislative packet has become less and less important over the last decade, because all we do is play defense. Nothing we advocate for actually gets passed. I mean, that doesn't mean we shouldn't be paying close attention to this. I just would throw that out there, that now that there's a guaranteed 60% gerrymandered majority of people that campaign against Milwaukee on a biannual basis, it just, the things we ask for really just don't matter in Madison. But we still, it's still something that should get formal discussion on what position both this board and the city should be taking on that.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Conrad, go ahead.
Well, I just want to say the city should be careful what it asks for, because the way the legislature works is, well, they may pass it and say, well, now we save the city X amount of dollars, and then they'll turn around and cut the shared revenue by the same amount of dollars. That's all I have to say.
All right, thank you, Mr. Conrad.
Yeah, I would say I agree with Mr. Conrad, and whenever I've entered this debate on our ledge packet, my recommendation has been, they're not going to give it to us anyway, so don't even give them ideas. That's been my attitude ever since 2010, frankly.
Okay, thank you. Any additional comment? Your new trustee is going to start. She works for the budget office, so you know that might be an opportunity to figure out what's happening there. So that's that. Item C, or anything else on the pending legislation? I think that.
Now that report is concluded. Thank you.
Okay, item C, Mr. Allen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the first item, personnel update, Melody reported in our A&L committee this morning that we're working with DER to fill the network administrator and accounting assistant two position. Also, the position that we're bringing one of our consulting positions in-house to save a substantial amount of money, and that we're working with DER to get that posted so that there can be a competition in the civil service process to fill that position. It's a quality assurance position that works with the business units and also with the IT staff to make sure that our merits system is working properly. On member services, new retirees on the payroll in November, we had 40. We're anticipating we might have 22. We've had a lot of retirements this year, and so I guess we're winding the year down with a few more. On item B, you know, as I've said before, you know, DER isn't able to do any in-person sessions right now, so we are still continuing to interface with our members telephonically or video conference as requested, and that seems to be going okay. Skipping down to financial services, the employer contribution prepayment options notice was sent to the city agencies this month. What is that all about? We send all the employers a notice telling them, this is what you owe if you pay January 1, this is what you owe if you pay February 1, and really what's involved in there is an interest discount, and the city historically in the last several years, since 2013 anyway, since the stable contribution provision was adopted, has chosen to pay early, which was very favorable for us, and as Larry, the actuary, has noted, it's pretty rare for that to happen, but it seems to happen here. And so we're anticipating again that the city of Milwaukee will make its contribution right away, immediately after New Year's Day, in the amount that was specified the valuation. We'll keep you advised of that, of course, when it happens next month. On information services, everything is going pretty well, knock on wood. Yesterday was the first anniversary of our new IT director, Jim Schober. And we hastened reporting, and so we got past the 1-year probation period. quite handily, and everything seems to be going pretty well on IT. So then the last item, well, there are some audits that are were reviewed today by the A&L committee, and that work is going to wind up shortly for Experic. Their contract is ending at the end of this year. And that we are still continuing negotiations that I mentioned earlier with the CLA, the new internal auditor, and Clifton Larson Allen is their full name. And our attorney, Jim Carroll, mentioned that he has some back and forth with them, and we're confident that we'll get the provisions that that they agreed to in the RFQ. Next month, we'll bring that contract back to the A&L and hopefully to the board as well. So that's really all the things I have to report on this month. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. Item 8, set for any questions for Mr. Allen on his report? Hearing none, item 8 is informational. Any questions regarding any items A through G? Is there a motion to adjourn?
So Mr. Conrad.
Mr. Conrad, a second?
No, no, it's not a second. I just want to thank Mr. Patty for his service to the board and his service as chairman. We appreciate your time and efforts very much. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Conrad.
Mr. Chair?
All right. Go ahead.
I'd like to echo Mr. Conrad's comments. Appreciate all the work you've done and all that you've been bringing to the meetings. Wanted you to know that.
I appreciate that, Ms. Ford. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. This is Aicha.
Ms. Sawa?
Yes, I just wanted to echo Ms. Ford and Mr. Conrad's comments, and thank you for your service.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that very much. All right. Nothing else. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Mr. Campbell, I'll make that motion, and I also second the fact. Thank you, Mr. Patty, for stepping up and having a leadership position on the board, not just this year, but throughout the years and your many times that you've been on the board. So I, with that, I'd make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Mr. Second. Campbell.
And, Mr. Bell will second that motion, and thank you, Mr. Patty. I already thanked you in the A&L committee meeting, and that goes for this session as well.
All right, I appreciate it all. Thank you. A motion was made and seconded. Any objections? All right, usually isn't. Meeting adjourned at 10:52 a.m.